Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kufhei Amun Aleph by the two dots. Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Katov Achat no Trikun. If a person writes one letter that represents a much larger word, Rabbi Yeshua ben Beter is Mechayev, and Chachamim are Putrim. I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Yossi ben Zimra, Minayin Lelashon no Trikun min HaTorah. Where do we find such a phenomena in the Torah that we have a word or letters that represent much bigger words that are, call them abbreviations, acronyms for something more meaningful than the actual word itself? Shneamar. It says by Avram Avinu, ki av hamon goyim nitaticha. You see already from the quotation marks that they're going to darshan the word av and hamon. Av nitaticha leumot bachor. Nitaticha be'umot. So the Av represents that I will make you a father unto the nations, and b'chor, you will be a chosen amongst the nations. The word hamon really means chaviv nitaticha be'umot, the chet and the hey being used interchangeably over here. I will make you beloved amongst the nations. Melech nitaticha be'umot, I made you a king amongst the nations. Vatik nitaticha be'umot, I made you an older statesman amongst the nations. And ne'aman nitaticha be'umot, and I made you faithful to the other nations, or you are the faithful amongst the nations. But here we see the word Av Hamon, which is the promise that Hashem makes to Abraham, that he will be an Av Hamon goyim nitaticha. The Gemara here darshins it as notrikun of Av Hamon, each letter representing a different word. Rabbi Yochanan Didei Amar, that was Rabbi Yochanan in the name of Yossi ben Zimra. Rabbi Yochanan himself said, from the Anochi that is found in the Aseret HaDibrot, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Sheotzeiticha, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that is Notrikun. Notrikun is Ano, Nafshi, Tivat, Yehavit. So the simple way to understand it is that I, myself, wrote the Torah and granted it or gave it to Bnei Yisrael. That's the way to read it. For others, read it, Ana, Nafshi, Tivat. Not only did I give the Torah, but I myself am found in the writings that I gave to you. Hashem saying about himself that he's embedded in those writings that he's giving over to Bnei Yisrael. Banan Amre, the Notrikun from Anochi is Amira ni'ima tiva yehiva. Again, the simple way to read it is that these are pleasant utterances. Tiva yehiva. I gave in writing, which is the Torah, which is the pleasant utterances. I gave in writing to Bnei Yisrael. Here, the Rabbanan are slightly different than the previous statement by eliminating any possibility of anthropomorphism over here, where God wrote down the Torah. But rather, the way it's presented here is that God spoke the Torah, and it automatically was written down, not that God himself wrote it down, as in the previous statement. Ika de Amre, some say Anochi de Mafreya, that you should look at the abbreviation of the word Anochi retroactively, meaning from the end of the word to the beginning of the word, starting with Yud, Chaf, then Nun, and then Aleph. Yehiva, Tiva, Ne'emanim, Amare. I gave that which was written, and faithful are its messages, its words. So the Torah that was given in writing is everlasting. One who keeps the Torah will be faithful to Hashem, which is something that was forever, not just for the moment. Moshe again says that Yehiva, Tiva, Ne'emanim, Amare. That which is given orally, the pleasant utterances, and that which is given in the written. That is, that what is given orally must be kept orally, Torah Shebe'al Peh, and the Torah Shebichtav has to remain the Torah Shebichtav, but the two Torot that were given to Bnei Yisrael. They, Rabbi Nathan Amre, they learned it out from the story by Bilam. Bilam, when he is going to Balak, in order to curse Bnei Yisrael on the way, his donkey veers from the path, says, Ki yarat haderech lenegdi, that the donkey leaves because Malach stood in the way and caused him to veer off the path. Yira, ra'ata, nitata. What was the yarata derech? Yira, he was fearful. He saw something that made him fearful. Ra'ata, he saw the malach, and nitata, and therefore he veered off the path. Ve'ra b'shmel ta'ano. But now from the word Carmel, which is found by the bringing of the Omer, the Karbana Omer, it says there that it has to be geres Carmel. So the Carmel is kar male, which means that the ear is full, that the kernels are rounded, be that the kernels have filled out the ear entirely, that the kernels are fresh. All of those are true about the Geres Carmel. That's what it means here, Kar Male. V'achar b'Yakov Amar, V'hu kililani kililad nimretzet. This is David HaMelech when he's being Tzvi's son, Shlomo HaMelech, to take care of certain things when he ascends to the throne. One of them is to take care of Shimi ben Gera, to ensure that the score is settled. And the reason is because he cursed me, a terrible curse, when I was leaving Yerushalayim in the Merit of Shalom. When David exits Yerushalayim, Shimi ben Gera meets him on the way out and curses him this horrible curse. So what is this nimretzet, this horrible curse that he had cursed David on the way out of Yerushalayim? This is what he said to him. No way, oh, David, you are an adulterer. Obviously referring to the Maaseh Bat Sheva. Moavihu, you are a descendant of Moav, referring to Ruth, was from Moav. Roseachu, you are a murderer, referring to the husband of Bathsheba, which was Uriah Achiti. Tzorerhu, you cause anguish, pain. Toivahu, you are disgusting. This is Shimi ben Gera cursing David on the way out during the Merit of Shalom, when David's basically being removed from the throne, and Shimi sees his opportunity to avenge partly the loss of Beit Shaul, that Beit Shaul is no longer the king, but rather David the Melech has taken over. And so he says that you, David, were unworthy of being the king, and he curses him with these items, these issues, obviously, that were problems for David the Melech, or questions about his lineage. So by the brothers, when they are in trouble with regards to Yosef and their interaction with him going down to Mitzrayim, they're taking responsibility for that which happened and say, what can we say? How can we justify ourselves? The Gemara Darshan's Nitzadak is, Nechonim anachnu, we are right. Tzadikim anachnu, we are righteous. Torim anachnu, we are pure. Dakim anachnu, and again, that's in the Aramaic, that means that we are clean or pure.
The other possibility is that Dakim means that they were humble.
Kedoshim anachnu, we are holy, which seems to be almost the opposite of the Pashtut Pasuk, which is Madaber Manitzadak, is that how can we justify ourselves? We have nothing to answer because we were guilty. But over here, the Gemara seems to say that the Nitzadak is actually making a statement about their Tzidkut, or their righteousness in this situation. What's the opposite of the Pashtut Pasuk? Right, the last Mishnah in the Perek is Akotev, Bet Odiot Pesh. Person writes two letters in two forgettings. Once in the morning, once in the afternoon. Rabbi Gamliel mechayev. Rabbi Gamliel says you're chayav, even though it's two halamot, even though it's two separate forgettings. That means that you knew it was Shabbat in between. Nevertheless, you're chayav for the two otiyot. Chamim putrim. The chamim say you are patur. Two halamot, you have to be patur. So now Rashi claims over here that why is it that these are two halamot? So Rashi says, because Kevin Dehavile Sha'ut ben Taim, since there was a duration of time in between, Kedele Da, then he could have known, Havile Kishteh Halamot. It's as if it was two forgettings. Not that necessarily it was two forgettings, just because the duration over which this took place means that we assume automatically that he knew about it in the morning, knew about it in the afternoon, he must have figured out it was Shabbat in between. This is very similar to what Rashi said in Klal Gadol, the first Mishnah in Klal Gadol. Rashi over there says, why are you chayav for every Shabbat? Because there are 6 weekdays in between. And there's no way that he could have gone through a whole week without knowing that there was a Shabbat. And that's what separates. Automatically, the weekdays separate between the Shabbatot. That's the way Rashi learns in Klal Gadol. That's also the way Rashi learns over here. Tosafot, in both locations, disagrees with Rashi. He says there's no such thing as a default knowledge. You can't just automatically know. Just because there are 6 weekdays does not mean that you remember that it was Shabbat. You have to remember in between that there was a Shabbat in order to be chayav for the next Shabbat. And similarly over here, says that you have to have had knowledge in between. Not simply because one in the morning, one in the afternoon, then it's automatic that it's two elamot, but you must have had knowledge of Shabbat in between in order to divide them into two elamot. And that's one of his proofs, or questions really against Rashi, is if you're right, Rashi, the Gemara never lays out, the Mishnah never lays out the duration which would trigger the automatic yediyah. Well, it says here, it's one in the morning, one in the afternoon. How do we know what that means? How far apart do they have to be to assume this default knowledge? I mean, is it a 12-hour period, 6-hour period, 24-hour period? The Mishnah never gives you that information, and that's why they think that Rashi's wrong about there being such a thing as a default yediyah. Here, Rashi and Tosafot disagree, similar to the way that they disagree in the beginning of Klal Gadol, in the first Mishnah, about whether this yediyah is an assumed yediyah, or is it an actual yediyah about it being Shabbat. Now, the Gemara wants to know, what is the argument between the Chachamim and Rabbi Gamliel and the Mishnah? Again, this is something that we've seen before. Rabbi Gamliel, Savar, in Yediyah L'chatzi Shiur. There's no such thing as a Yediyah until you've actually completed something that is significant. if you've done one insignificant act and then another insignificant act, the di'ah, the knowledge in between, does not remove the fact that you've now accomplished a single significant item. On the other hand, Rabbanon Tzavra Yeshu di'ah l'chatzi shiur. There is such a concept of having knowledge that'll break up the shiur. In our case here, it means writing one letter, which is not significant in terms of writing on Shabbat. Once you have a yediyah, you remember it's Shabbat, before you write the second letter, is that yediyah sufficient to say that we have two events here, two separate events? The Chachamim say yes. The yediyah, the knowledge in between, is enough to make this into a writing of one letter and another writing of one letter. The Gamliel says yediyah is only meaningful when you have a event or a significant action. Once you've had a significant action and then you remember, then you could say about that action that you've now separated between that action and the next action. Otherwise, the yediyah is meaningless. You can only have a yediyah about something that was forgotten in a significant sense. He forgot the malacha that he was not supposed to do. Here he didn't do any malacha till then. And therefore, there's no yediyah in between, and the one letter in the morning and the one letter in the afternoon will be mitzdarif to make you culpable for a korban chatat. Okay, with that, we conclude the perek abuneh, and now we begin perek ha'oreg. Rabbi Eliezer Omer. Again, we've seen Rabbi Eliezer before quoted in the Gemara, which is oreg shlosha chutim b'tchila. If you weave in the beginning, you need to have three strings worth in order to be chayav. V'chat al harig. This is what we had quoted from Rabbi Eliezer before. If you're adding on to the existing weave, then you only need one string through. You don't need three strings. So what Rabbi Eliezer is basically saying is, to start from scratch, you need something more significant in order that it stays in place and that you've established a weave. Once the weave has been established, then simply adding one string is already a significant action to be mechayev you on Shabbat. Chachamim marim, ben b'tchila, ben b'sof shiru bet chutim. Chachamim say, whether you're starting out the weave or whether you're continuing the weave, you need two strings through in order to be chayav. Ose shtei batei nirim, benirim, bikirus, benafa, bikvara, ubesal chayav. So a person who makes two batei nirim on the nirim, again, we'll get to this in the Gemara, what exactly that means, to make the two batei nirim on the nirim. Then also the word kirus, the Gemara will determine what that is. Benafa, bekvarah, besal, those are a sieve, a sifter, and a basket. Over there, the shnei batei nirim are simpler to understand. It simply means to weave two rows worth. Again, we describe this when you have the lulav branches. You lay them out, the leaves of the lulav. You lay them all out on horizontal, and then you weave on the vertical, you weave two through. One up, down, up, down, that's how you start it. And the next one you do opposite the first one that you did, which is, if it was up, you could do down. And that's what starts the weave. Once you've done those two, you've created called shnei batei nirim. Those two batei nirim, those two rows will hold the weave together, because you have done them opposite each other. And that is the beginning of the weave. That's sufficient to make you culpable in each of these instances, whether it's with the nafa, the kvara, or the sal, that makes you chayav. Hatofer bet firot, someone who stitches two stitches, ve'hakorea almanat litfor bet firot, or someone that tears or rips for the reason of restitching two stitches, then you are chayav on Shabbat. After Rav Yitzchak, when Rav Yitzchak came, he brought a braita that says, Tani Shtayim. It says that our Mishnah, or the braita, read two. Where it says, Anan Tanan Gimel. Our Mishnah says that Rabbi Eliezer believes that there are three in the beginning. One, if the weave already exists. And now we have a braita or an emendation to the Mishnah that says, from Rabbi Yitzchak, that it was two that he said. Where it says, Lokasho. These are not irreconcilable, but rather, Habe'elime, Habe'kine. Depends on the type of weave, the string that you're using for the weave. Is it fat, thick, strong string, or Habe'kine? Are we talking about thin, narrow, and weaker string? Which is which? The Gemara says, we have two opinions. Amri law, some say the Haigisa. Some say that the three refers to the thicker string, and some say that the three refers to the thinner string. Amri lo lahagisa, some say that this way. Alime blata lo satre, teresha satre. When you have the thicker, wider string, stronger string, then if you have three weaves, it won't undo itself. It won't unravel. Tre satre. On the other hand, two will unravel. Tine, when you have the thinner or narrower thread, then tre nami lo satre. Even two will not undo themselves. Because of the thickness of the string, the weave, the thread that you're putting through, when it's very thick, it doesn't stay in place. So you'll need three rows in order to hold it in place, because it's a grosser type of weave, therefore it takes three rows. The thinner string is a tighter weave, a finer weave, And therefore, if you put it through twice already, that would be sufficient to hold it in place. On the other hand, there are Vamila Lahagisa. Some say it the opposite, that the Tine Talato, the thinner, narrower, weaker thread, you need three, because Yediye, then it's recognizable. You can see it. It's of significance. Tre Lo Yediye, if you only have two rows of weave, then Lo Yediye, it's not recognizable, it's not easy to see. Alime, on the other hand, the thicker strings, Tre Nami Yediye, it's visible already. It's recognizable already when you do two rows of the thicker string because it's thicker. And that two rows of the thicker string are equivalent to three rows of the thinner thread. Tanya, we have a brayta. Ore gimel chutim batchila v'echad al arvi'i chayav. Someone who weaves three threads or three rows in the beginning and then one on an existing weave, chayav. Chamim amim ben batchila ben besof. But it's beginning and the end. The shiran bet chutim, that the amount that you have to do is two rows worth. Ubisafa, if you are on the hem, then bet chutim berochav gimel batei nirim. If you're on the hem or on the edge of the beged, then you need two strings worth. What's the width that you need? So far we've only talked about the amount that you need in terms of weave across. So you have two rows of weave. But how long is each weave? So that's what they say here, that it's two weaves that are the width of three batei nirim. Ha, the mazet domeh. What is this similar to? The reg tziltzul katan. That someone who is weaving a small or narrow belt, then you have bet chutim v'rochav gimel batei nirim. Person would do two rows of weave that has a width of three batei nirim. What the batei nirim is a good question. It could be that the batei nirim are the up and down of the weave, that the batei nirim is the up down of the weave, which would be the similar to what we saw by the nafan and the kvara, the up and down. The other possibility of what the batei nirim are, which we're going to see in a couple minutes in the Gemara, is that on the loom itself, they have the harnesses, which are called the nirim. Those harnesses have strung into them little eyes, or eye of the heddle, which are called the beit nir. And they alternatively, they string the sheti, the warp, into those holes. And those holes then, they have two of these screens. Then they alternate the strings. And by working the loom, the two screens move up and down. By moving up and down, they move every other string up or down, and then you throw the shuttle through there, and that basically makes it easier to weave. Instead of you doing the up and down, these screens make the up and down for the strings, and all you have to do is throw the shuttle through on each instance. So that's what these batei nirim are. See, the batei nirim means a box, the box being that it's up and down, or the similar to what we have by the loom itself is the batei nirim, those that hold the strings to move them up and down on the warp, so the equivalent of two strings worth because it's every other string that is on that beit nir. In fact, that we said there that it's three chutim in the beginning, and one when you add on to the weave, chayav, that's stama, Rabbi Eliezer. This breita, or the Tanakama, in this breita clearly holds like Rabbi Eliezer is Rabbi Eliezer. Tanya Yidach, we have an alternative braita. Reg bet chutim alagas valimra. Someone who weaves two strings alagas valimra, whether it's on the existing weave or alaimra, is in the beginning of the beged. It's the edge or beginning of the beged. Chayav, there you are chayav. Rabbi Eliezer omer, afilu echad. Even one. When you're adding on, you only need one. Ubusafa, if you're on the hem or the edge of the beged, shnei chutim brochav shlosha batei nirim. Then you need two strings worth, two weaves. The width of three batei nirim is chayav. Halama zeh dumeh. Or is it similar to the oreg tziltzul katan, shnei chutim brochav gimel batei nirim. To a thin or narrow belt that you use two strings, two threads of weave that are three batei nirim wide. Gemara says, v'oreg bet chutim alagas valimra. Based on the fact that it says here that you only need two strings on the weave, both when it's the gas, when there's an existing weave, or ayimra, on the beginning edge of the beged, chayav, that's tama kirabanan. It means that the Tanakama here, or the stam mishnah, is like the rabbanan. So we have two braitot. First braita, the stam, is like the Rabbi Eliezer, and the second braita, the stam, is like the chachamim. So now the Gemara asks, ose bed batei nirin bin nirin. My bin nirin, what does that mean? Amar abayi tarte bebatei nira bechada bin nira. Rashi explains over here, bet pamim markiv lechut shel sheti bevat nira zainu shekorim licha, which is the eye of the heddle. And that's what Rashi is discussing over here. The eye of the heddle, which is the bait near that we described before, is that which is on the near. The near is that harness which holds on to the strings of the sheti and elevates alternatively every other string based on the two harnesses that are holding up the strings. And that's what it means over here. When we say tarte beit nirin, bin nirin means that you are putting two in the beit nirah, v'chada bin nirah, and one that goes through the near. Because that means that every other string, so two of the strings are in the beit nirah, in the eye of the heddle, and the string in between them goes through the harness. It goes through the harness, but it's not held by the batei nirim. Because the batei nirim are what elevate the strings, so the one that's in the middle is going to be left behind because it's on the other harness. And that's how you create this two batei nirim that we're speaking about on the near. There are other explanations. I'm trying to give you the simplest explanation of this picture of it here. Here's the near, and this is the beit nir. Two strings are on the beit nir. The other string has to go through in between because it's on the other harness over here. It's on the beit nir of the other nir. So you have to make two batei nirim. You're going to have two strings in the eye of the heddle, in the leech, or the leech is what they're actually called, and one that goes in between that's on the other nir, on the other harness. All right, the next is Bikirus. What is Bikirus? Amarav Motzvita. Rashi says Motzvita is Biryat Gardin.
Our Gimba Regel. You're talking about a foot loom or a treadle loom that is normally used by men,
which was much more extensive, and the up and down motion of the Nirim was created by pushing the pedals or pressing the pedals. That's how the weaver made the sheti, the warp, go up and down, was by using the pedals to alternate the two harnesses that are going up and down, as opposed to a standing weave of the women, which was done either by physically moving it up or down or having one harness moves up or down. Rashi says, Matsvitas,
that is the same function in this loom as Kane, Haola, Vioreid, Biriot, Arigat, Nashim. In the woman's loom, they have a staff, a stick that is used to push down the woof, the strings that you are weaving through the warp by pushing the shuttle back and forth. They have to be pressed down to make sure that the stitching or the weaving is tight. There's a kaneh that is used in order to do that. We bumped into this kaneh before because that was the malacha of middak deik. So that is the kaneh that is found in the woman's loom. In the men's loom or the pedal loom, treadle loom, foot loom, there what's used is something called a kirus. A kirus is basically a frame, looks like the side of a baby's rib, a frame that has uprights in it, and the warp runs through it, and every time you run the shuttle through, you pull this back in order to force the weave to be tight. So it does the same function as the kaneh in the woman's loom. That is what the kirus does in the men's loom. I sent out a picture that you can see this.
All right, now the Gemara says, what about this, a tofer bet tefirot, someone who stitches two stitches? It says, hatanina bavot melachot. Why are you bringing it again in our Mishnah? We already had it in Klal Gadol when it enumerated the 39 melachot. Over there, one of the melachot was a tofer bet tefirot. So why would you repeat it again in this Mishnah? Where it says, shem dekabai lemitna seifa. Because you have to write the latter half of the Mishnah now, which is a korea, manat litfor bet tefirot. Tani nami a tofer. Because it had to teach us about ripping or tearing. That the amount of tearing is that you have to tear enough that you're going to repair through the tearing bet tefirot, two stitches worth. Tear on the assumption that you're going to stitch up two stitches. Therefore, it wrote a tofer bet tefirot and then a korea amanat litfor a bet tefirot. Where it says, v'akorea na'ana mitavnina bavot melachot. That's also mentioned in the 39 melachot in the Mishnah in Klal Gadol. So that can't be the reason that they are repeated over here. Ela mishum tegabai lemitna seifa has to do the seifa, which is the next Mishnah. Korea bechamatova meito, someone who tears in anger or over the deceased. That's the next Mishnah. Shumachik tani atofer shtei tefirot. So that's why it had to introduce. We had to get involved in stitching because we got involved in stitching because we're going to get involved in tearing. And we're getting involved in tearing because we're going to introduce a new type of tearing here that was not mentioned in the Mishnah in Klal Gadol, and then it's tearing over the mate or tearing because of one's anger. Alright, Akorea, al manat litvor shtei tefirot. Heicha mishkachala. How did that happen? What's the case that he tore two threads in order to stitch up, or the amount of two threads, and that was constructive? The avda kekisata. Because he did it like a kisata, Rashi says, that when you stitch, and if you've ever woven or stitched, what ends up happening is that at a certain point, you might stitch too tight. And if you stitch too tight, the item that you're stitching actually starts to fold up, or the equivalent of shrivel up. It pulls, right? It's lumpy, it pulls inward. So what you're going to do is you're going to cut those tefirot that are causing the pull in the item. Once you cut them, that'll release the pull. The rest of the stitching will be there. But how much you have to do, that's what we said here, is a kore. He rips out those two stitches, or the amount of two stitches, because that allows the beged to stretch back to its normal size or its normal width. And then you'll have to restitch that area because you ripped them out or you cut them in that area. And that's koreya almanat, lit for shtei tefirot, and something that is constructive in nature. Next mishnah. This mishnah is a very interesting mishnah. The gemara that goes along with it too is a very interesting gemara, as well as the way the Rambam reads this mishnah, which is a koreya b'chamato v'almeto. Someone who rips out of anger or because of his mate. Chol ha'mekal kalim, and anything that is destructive on Shabbat is patur, p'turim. V'ha'mekalkel almanat l'takein. On the other hand, if someone does something destructive in nature, but in order to fix, to be constructive, shiro k'mitakein, then the shear that you use is the constructive side of it. So that's what we just had before. Hakoreya, which is a destructive type of melacha. If you do it in a constructive form, which we just described before, you're doing it because what you do by ripping it, you're actually fixing something. Then the shiur of the destructive force is almanat litfor beit tefirot, the amount that it would take to stitch up two tefirot. You know, the constructive side of the melacha. So we have here. Shiur ha-melabein, ha-menapetz, ha-tzoveya, ha-tova, melo, rochav, ha-sit, kaful. The amount that you have to do to be chayav for these melachot, ha-melabein is someone who bleaches, ha-menapetz, someone who combs, ha-tzoveya, someone who dies, ha-tova, someone who spins, is k'melo, rochav, ha-sit, kaful. It's double the amount of the width of a sit. The width of a sit is the distance between your forefinger and your middle finger. So it's two times the distance between your forefinger and your middle finger, which the Gemara says is the distance between your thumb and your forefinger. The distance between your thumb and forefinger, according to the Gemara, is equivalent to two times the distance between your forefinger and your middle finger. The standard, which is someone who weaves two strings, the amount that you have to do is k'melo hasit. Lo asit is the distance between your forefinger and your middle finger. So the amount you have to actually do in the weaving is smaller than the amount of the preparation of string for the weaving. All the other melachot that were mentioned here are items to prepare the thread or the string to be used, whether it's bleaching, dyeing, combing, spinning. All of those require twice the shiur than the actual weaving itself, the width of the weaving itself. Kever minhu. Hakorea b'chamato u'be'evlo v'almeto chayav. Someone who tears because of their anger, in their state of mourning, or for deceased, is chayav. Our Mishnah says, patur. Even though he's in violation of Shabbat, because he's tearing on Shabbat, which is inappropriate, yatsa yidei kriya. He is yotzei the kriya. He has an obligation to tear kriya for the mate, the deceased that's there. So we're talking about someone who is obligated to be mitabel, to mourn for the deceased. And one of the things they're required to do as a mourner is to rend their garments. So the rending of the garments that's required here is constructive because you're accomplishing the mitzvah. So in accomplishing the mitzvah of tearing the kriya, that type of tearing, even though it's a destructive force to tear, it's constructive in nature because you've accomplished the obligation upon you to rend your garments. So that's the reason you're chayav, even though you violated the Shabbat. But our mission says you are patur. So how do we reconcile? Lokasha, habameti day, habameti alma. Finds why he rips or rends his garments. If it's for his own mate, then he'll be culpable. He'll be chayav because he did something constructive. He's yotzei yidei kriya, the obligation to rend one's garments as an avel, as a mourner. But meita alma, if he tears kriya over any deceased that he's not obligated to mourn for or tear kriya for, that would be patur. V'ha meito k'tani. How could you say that? So Gemara says, that doesn't work so well, that explanation, because ha meito k'tani. Both the Mishnah, our Mishnah, and the Braita that we just brought, both say meito, his mate. So you can't say it's mate, his mate, and then mate the alma, because they both say mateo. They both have the possessive form of mate in there. So the Gemara says, okay, we'll have to say that the olam b'mate day. Both the Mishnah and the Braita are talking about his own mate, someone that he would be connected to, is related to. Obahanach talav b'nei avelut ninu. That we're talking about a case or a differentiation between a mate that he's obligated to mourn for And a mate who's a relative or somebody that he tears kriya for, that he is not obligated to mourn for. You're only obligated to mourn for the seven relatives that are mentioned in Parshat Emor by the Kohanim. That is a mother, father, brother, sister, son, daughter, and wife, husband. Those are the seven krovim that one is obligated to mourn for. So if it's one of those seven krovim, then that's what the bride is speaking about, because that's a constructive kriya where he's obligated to tear kriya, and therefore it is chayav on Shabbat. Our mishnah speaking about anybody else that's a relative, but it's not one of those seven relatives that you're not obligated to mourn for, and therefore you're not obligated to tear kriya. In that case, you're patur on Shabbat because you're just mikalkel when you rend your garments on Shabbat. The Gemara says, okay, what exactly is the situation here? Because via chachamhu, if this mate that he's not obligated to take kriya on because it's not one of the seven krovim, if he's a talmid chacham, chuyuv mechayiv, he's still obligated to rend his garments. Tanya, chacham shemate. Hakol Krovav. If a Talmud Chacham passes away, everyone is considered to be his relative. Kol Krovav, Sakalatcha. Everybody's his relative. That's a fact of life. You can't become a relative just because he's a Talmud Chacham. Ela Ema, Hakol Kikrovav. Everyone's like his relatives, meaning like the seven Krovim. And therefore, Hakol Karim Alav. Everybody rends their garments, tears Kriya over this mate. Hakol Chotzim Alav. They tear their garments to the point where it falls off their shoulder. That's a sign of Avelut. Hakol Mabrin Alav Birachava. They also, the first meal of an Avel after they return from burying the mate is a meal they may not eat from their own food. They are provided food from others. In their day, they used to put a big spread out on the street and everybody would eat together out on the street. So it's over here. Everybody is a part of this meal, is entitled to be a part of this meal because they are classified as krovim of the Talmud Chacham. Mar says, L'tzricha d'lav Chacham. Well, it must be a case that he's not a Talmud Chacham, and that's why in our Mishnah. V'ya adam kasher hu chuyuvim mechayiv. If he happens to be a person that is kasher, that is proper, upright, upstanding Jew, then he also has to rend his garments. The Tanya. Mipnei ma meitim banav unotav shel adam. Why does a person's children pass away? K'shein k'tanim, when they are still minors. K'dei shivkeh mitabel al adam kasher. In order that he should cry and mourn over upstanding Jews. Where it says, I don't understand. K'dei shivkeh is written in the future tense. So what do you mean? Arvona shaklei minei? They're taking a deposit from him. They're taking collateral from him. They're taking his young children in order that in the future he should cry and mourn over these k'sherim. Ela mipnei shelo bacha vitabel al adam kasher. No, the wording is wrong here. It's not in the future tense, but rather in the past tense. The reason that his minor children pass away is because he did not cry and did not mourn in the past over an Adam Kasher, of an upstanding Jew. Kol Abuchel Adam Kasher, anybody who cries over the loss of an upstanding Jew, Mochlim lo akol avonotav, all of his sins are forgiven, Bishvil kvod shasa, because the honor that, the respects that he paid towards this individual. Case in our Mishnah has to be a case where it's not somebody's obligated to mourn for, it's not a Talmud Chacham, and not an Adam Kasher. Mar says, well, there's another problem, because if he's present when the person passes away, you have to tear kriya for being in the presence of someone who sold the parts, irrespective of your obligation in terms of mourning. This is if you are present when someone departs from this world, you have to tear kriya, you have to rend your garments. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Lazar Omer, Omeid, Alamet, Veshat Yitziat Neshama, someone who is present when the Neshama leaves the body of someone, Chayav Nikra, you have to tear kriya. Ha, Lamazet Domeh, what is it similar to? A Sefer Torah, Shenisrefa, like a Sefer Torah that is burnt. Someone who sees a Sefer Torah that is burnt, or being burnt, must rend their garments, is Chayav, obligated to tear kriya. Learn that out in the Gemara in Moed Katan from the story by Yoyakim where they're burning the Megillah. And over there the Navi says, Lo pachadu v'lo karu bigdehem, that they were not fearful and they did not rend their garments, implying that what they did was wrong, that they should have torn kriya. Therefore, you have to tear your garments. Rashi says something very interesting over here. It says, Af nishmat Yisrael, any Jew, hanitela, that is passing away, you have to tear your garments because ein lecha reik b'Yisrael shein bo Torah u'mitzvot. There's not a single Jew that does not full of mitzvot. That the Gemara says in other places, why are Bnei Yisrael domeh l'rimon? Because they are meleim mitzvot k'rimon, that they are filled with mitzvot like the rimon. That's afilu reikim shebem. Even the lowest of Jews is still full of mitzvot, and therefore any Jew, if you see a passing away of a Jew, you're present at the passing away of a Jew, one would have to tear kriya, one would have to rend their garments. Okay, so the Mishnah is talking about a case where he's not present at the time that the person passes away. So now we took care of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a case where it's not a relative he's obligated to mourn over, it's not a Talmud Chacham, it's not an Adam Kasher, and he's not present at the time that the person passes away, and that's why you're patur in the Mishnah, because the rending of the garments is not constructive, because you were not obligated to tear Kriya in that case. Where it says, great. That took care of tinach meto. That takes care of the stira between the brayta about the deceased. Ela chamato, chamato kasha. We still have a problem about anger. The anger in the Mishnah is patur. The anger, tearing for the anger in the brayta is chayav. Rav says, alo kasha. That's not a problem. Because, harav Yehuda, harav Shimon. So the difference between either you hold up Rabbi Yehuda's position or Rabbi Shimon's position. Harav Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, melachash ain't tzricha legufa, chayav alea. If you do a melacha, but you don't need it for the same purpose as the Mishkan. That's what Tosafot says. Rashi says that it's not done in such a manner that it ends up being that you need the utility of the object that you are doing or the Melacha that you are doing. So in that case, you are, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Chayav. Whereas, according to Rabbi Shimon, so our Mishnah will be authored by Rabbi Shimon because he's ripping out of anger. Does he need the tear? The answer is no. The tear is not because he needs the tear. He's tearing to release the pent-up emotions with his anger. He's tearing to release those emotions. So the tearing is not done for the sake of the tearing itself. It's for what the tearing does for him emotionally, and the tearing itself is, quote-unquote, irrelevant. So in that case, that's what we call melacha she'ein tzricha legufa. Again, in the Mishkan, tearing was done in order to rectify a problem and then to restitch it up. And so therefore the tear was necessary to get to the next stage of stitching it up. And according to Rashi, that the tearing done was specifically because you wanted the tear, not because of any other side benefit of the tear. And so over here, that's exactly what you have. Here, someone's tearing out of anger is not the way it was done in the Mishkan for the purpose in the Mishkan. It's also not for the purpose of the tearing. It's the purpose of assuaging his anger. And so because of that, it's a melacha she'ein tzricha legufa. We've said other places in the Gemara Shabbat already that Rabbi Yehuda thinks you are chayav midoraita for that. And Rabbi Shimon says it's patur of al asur, only chayav midorabanan. So Rabbi Shimon will be the author of our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda will be the author of the braita. Gemara says, Imer dishmait le'er Rabbi Yehuda b'mitakein. Rabbi Yehuda might say melacha she'ein tzricha legufa is chayav when you're talking about constructive melachot. B'mikalkel mishmait le'er. In destructive malachot, who says that he agrees that malach she'ein tzricha legufa is chayav? Am Rabbi Avin, hainami mitakeinu. This tearing is also constructive. Yudka'avin nachar ruach liyitzro. Because he has this emotional release, this cathartic experience when he rips his garments over the fact that he is angry. So that release of emotions is considered to be constructive in nature. My says, uki hai gavda mishari. If that's really true, if that's why you're tearing, is that really mutar? Vatanya, we have a braita. Shimon Elazar omer mishum chilfa bar agra, shamar mishum Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, hamakarei begadav bechamato. Someone who rents his garments out of anger, ve'a mishaber kalav bechamato. Someone who smashes his utensils in his anger, va'ver ze'er mevotav bechamato. Someone who throws or disperses his money in anger, yehei be'enecha koveid avodah zarah. Shvi in your eyes, like someone who worships idols. Shekach umunato shel yetzara. This is the methodology, the modus operandi of the yetzara. Hayom omer le'asekach. Today he says do a little thing. Machar omer le'asekach. He makes small steps. He slowly pushes the person towards idol worship. He doesn't do it in one shot. Nobody would acquiesce. Instead, he does small baby steps and takes you down that path. He pushes you step by step until you go to Avodah Zarah. So I'm Ravin Maikra. Maikra, what's the pasuk that says this? It says, Lo yebecha el zar, velo tishtachaveh la el nechar. It says over there that you should not have a foreign god, and you should not bow down to a strange god. But what's interesting about the pasuk, it says, Lo yebecha, should not be in you el zar, a foreign god. The Gemara is interpreting here, what does it mean that there should be no foreign god inside of you? What's something that's inside of you that is quote-unquote a foreign god? That is anger. That's the emotion that comes out from inside of you. And therefore, lo tishtachaveh le'enechar. And also, do not bow down to foreign or strange gods. The Gemara sees those as being a prerequisite or a continuum. That a person who allows the El Nechar inside of him, the anger inside of him, will eventually lead to the bowing down to the strange gods. Ezu El Zar Shiesh Begufo Shel Adam. What is this foreign god that is found inside of the person? Avi Omer, Zeh Yitzhara. This is the evil inclination. So therefore, the evil inclination who causes him to be angry and release that anger will also take him down the path eventually to idol worship. It's a step along a continuum that's not going to end well. Mar says, Lutricha. No, it's a case where the anger is permitted. That he is wants to engender a certain amount of fear amongst the household, the people of his household. He wants them to realize that this is something serious. He wants them to be on guard. It's not anger for the sake of anger. It's not anger to release the emotion anger. He's tearing or breaking something in order that the people around him understand the severity of the issue. Kiadra Yehuda. Shalif Matzvaito, that Rabbi Yehuda used to rip off something or tear something off of his beged to show that he was upset and that they would be fearful, that they would be on guard. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Tavarmani, Tavire. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov used to break broken utensils. So it wasn't a problem being wasteful, but he took already broken utensils and broke them more in order that they understood that he was upset. Rav Sheshit Ramila La'amte Monine Aresha. Sheshit used to take the fish brine and pour it over the head of his maidservant. Rabbi Abba Tovar Nechtama. And Rabbi Abba used to break the covers of the barrels of the pitchers. Now, given the Gemara's conclusion, what's very interesting here is how the Rambam codifies this, the halacha. The Rambam in Hilchot Shabbat, Perek Yud Halacha Yud, codifies this issue of a koreya, ripping one's garment because of anger or because of a mate. The way the Gemara seems to conclude over here, that ripping one's garment for anger is not considered to be a tikkun, is not considered to be constructive. Only if it's done in a demonstrative way is it considered to be something that is positive. And with regards to a mate, we're there, Tosafot believes that the reason that it's considered constructive is because you're mekayim the mitzvah of kriya for avilut. Rashi indicates that maybe it's because Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the Mishnah. We'll discuss that more tomorrow, that machloka between Rashi and Tosafot. But that's the conclusion of the Gemara. On the other hand, the Rambam, when he codifies, writes this, Vala korea lahafsida, someone who rips in order to destroy something, patur peneshu mikalkel. Korea bechamato, someone who bends his garments out of anger, or al mate, over the deceased, shu chayav likualav, that he's obligated to tear kriya for chayav. He is chayav mipnei shmiyashevet da'ato, because it settles his mind, it assuages his anger, and then he will be calm afterward. And because his anger is now been extinguished, it's like he fixed something with chayav. Two things that are interesting in the Rambam. The first is that he says, what is considered constructive about tearing in anger is exactly the point that the Gemara seems to reject, which is the fact that the tearing does something in order to settle the anger of the individual. Number two is that the Rambam says by the tearing of a mate, one of the reason that a person tears by a mate, it seems from the Rambam, is also as a emotional release. And that the kriya that is done by Navel is not simply a rending of the garments because of the obligation. It's not to engender some emotional release, but rather it is a result of the emotional release. And because of that emotional release, the person tears the garment to release that emotion that they're feeling over the mate. Those are two very interesting things that the Rambam says. Number one, about tearing kriya over the mate. And number two, about what's considered to be a tikkun when one tears in anger. And we'll discuss more about the Rambam Shita in Mikal Kalim, which is very unusual, in tomorrow's daf. Amar Rab Shimon Behezi, Amar Rab Shub, Ben Levi, Shum Bar Kapara. Kolam Reed Demarot, Demaot, Al Adam Kasher, Kodesh Baruch Hu. Sofran umenichan bevet gnazav. Anybody who sheds tears over an upstanding Jew, and Kodesh Baruch Hu counts them and places them in his storehouse. Shenemar, nodia servatata, sima dimati benodcha, alo besifratcha. Nodi sifratata, you counted my wanderings, sima dimati benodecha, you placed my tears in your flask. That take my tears that I shed and place them into your storage, into your flask. Alo besifratcha, aren't they written in your book? That Hashem tracks the tears that are spilled over the ksherim and he preserves them in order to reward those that cry over those that are ksherim. Anybody who's lazy to an eulogy of a Talmud Chacham, he's worthy of being buried in his lifetime. They bury them, it says that they bury him on the edge of his property in Timnat Serach, Asher Bahar Ephraim. It is in the mountains of Ephraim. Yeshua is from Shevet Ephraim. It's a fall in Har Gash, north of Har Gash, whether Har Gash The modern day meaning of the word hargash means a volcanic type of hill. Up in the Golan Heights, you have these cones that pop out of the ground that are mountains, which they call hargash. That hargash has this meaning over here as well, or whether hargash is a proper noun in the place. So that the hargash, the Gemara is interpreting to mean that Hashem wanted to put a mountain over them and kill them, because they were mitatzel in the eulogy of Yoshua bin Nun. They didn't take care of Yoshua bin Nun properly. The reason the Gemara assumes that they were mitatzel, that they did not eulogize or take care of Yoshua or be mitabel over Yeshua properly, is because we find by Moshe Rabbeinu and by Aharon, when they pass away, it says that the people mourned them, that they cried over them, they had an avelut for an extended period of time. We don't find any such mention by Yeshua. And because of that absence, that omission, because I believe that that was an indication of the improper treatment that was given to Yeshua in his burial.
Person who is lazy or does not make sure that the eulogy of a chacham is done properly will not have a long life. That is a midah keneged midah. It's a measure for measure. Shemar b'sasa b'shocha tirivena.
Gemara uses this pasuk in other places. Gemara Brachot, we saw it already.
B'sasa b'shalcha tirivena. The exile, you buy the measure contended with them, is an indication of midah keneged midah, that Hashem acts with those that act improperly.
Etvei, Rabbi Chiya b'Av Rabbi Yochanan, v'yavdu ha'am et Hashem kol yimei Yeshua, v'chol yimei hazakenim, asher yichu yomim achrei Yeshua. The Am worshipped Hashem all the days of Yeshua, and all the days of the Zkenim, of the elders after him, Sherichu Yomim Acharei Yeshua, that were many years after Yeshua. So that sounds like the people were fine. Even after the time of the death of Yeshua, the people behaved accordingly, which indicates that they were Marich Yomim, that they had long lives, even after the burial of Yeshua. So if they didn't give him a proper eulogy, and the Mida Keneged Mida is that their lives are shortened, why are they having long lives after the burial of Yeshua? It says, Erichu Yamim. So Malay Bavlai, Babylonian, referring to him, because Rabbi Chiya Bar Alva came from Babel to Eretz Israel, says, Yamim Erichu, Shanim Lo Erichu. You're right, they had long days afterwards, they didn't have long years afterwards. Erichu Yamim is that they had a long number of days afterwards, not a long number of years. Elamiata, he says back to him, if that's the way you're going to read it. When the Pasuk, the end of Yeshua says, Laman, Yirbu, Yumechem, Bivayim Vinechem, what are you going to say? Yamim v'lo shanim? That one who does this and acts accordingly will have his days extended and the days of his children extended. You're going to tell me now that that promise, that bracha from Hashem, just means that you have long days. You have a long number of days, but not long years. That doesn't make so much sense. When it says bracha shani, bracha is different. It's said in the constructor, the positive form, we read it in the most expansive way. But yamim means even shanim. When we're talking about a curse or something negative, then we read it in the most narrow sense. Rabbi Chiya bar Yehoshua Rabbi Yochanan, chad min ha'achim shemet. If one of the brothers passes away, da'agu kol achim kulan. All the brothers should worry. Echad mibnei ha'chabura. If an individual amongst a group, whatever the grouping or designation is, whether it's those that learn together, whether it's those in the same profession, whatever that grouping is, if one of them passes away, da'agu kol ha'chabura kula. The entire grouping should worry about it. They are a part and parcel of the group, and therefore if they pass away, it's as if Hashem took something from this family as a warning, took something from this group as a warning. Gemara in Moed Katan describes it as a pile of stones, and if you pull out one of the stones from the pile, all the stones move. And then everybody's affected or impacted by the death of one person in the chabura or in the family. Amrila demet gadol, amrila demet katan. Here it's specifically maybe about the family, it might be true in the chabura as well. The question is, the one who passes away here, are we talking about the youngest of the brothers? Or are we talking about the oldest of the brothers? In the chabura, we're talking about whether it's the elder statesman or the youngest or the most important person in the grouping and the least important person in the grouping. We have deot to both sides. As Rashi says that the mate katan, we're talking about the youngest or the lowest here, is because that's the warning shot. Hashem is sending a warning shot over the bow to say, listen, there's something wrong here. So he takes the youngest or the lowest, and that's a warning to the others to be careful. And the Amri Law, some say that it's the Gadol, because the Midat Din and the death happened to the elder statesman, to the oldest of the brothers. That's an indication that something's wrong, and therefore they all have to worry. So there are two different opinions as to which one you should be worrying about, whether it's the oldest brother or the youngest brother, the most experienced elder statesman or important versus the youngest or least important. Okay, we'll stop over here.